We are continuing on in Parshat Chukat. On Monday, we looked at the broad strokes of Parshat Chukat, the idea of this chok that life can come from death, the significance of a shift of generations, of producing a new perspective, and the fact that this Parsha is permeated with, on the one hand, the specter of death and the loss of that generation and the loss of its leaders, and the rise of a new generation who have a whole new worldview and a whole new way of seeing things, and have stood up to the challenges that the previous generation weren't able to stand up to in order to enter into the land. There's a particular detail in the parsha that generally gets a lot of attention, and I want us to give it attention as well, and give it a perspective that, in the spirit of these shirim, is a broader, more global perspective answer to a local question. And that local question is, what happened with Moshe? What happened in Meimariva? The Jewish people complain, they want water. God tells Moshe to speak to the rock. Moshe lashes out at the people verbally and then hits the rock. Water comes forth. And then Hashem says to Moshe, very painfully, the Gzar Din on Moshe Rabbeinu in Perek Chaf, Pasuk Yud Bet. Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, God says to Moshe, Ve'elah Haron and to Aharon, Ya'an lo he'emantem bi, because you didn't have emuna in me. Moshe and Aharon. L'hakdisheni le'enei b'nei Yisrael, to sanctify me before the eyes of Israel. L'chein lo taviu et akal hazel la'aretz shenatati lahem. Therefore, I will not allow you to lead these people into the land which I have promised to them, which I will give to them. Very striking. Very harsh. What does that mean? Why is that the response? Now, in terms of the nature of the sin, we're not going to get into the nitty-gritty of the nature of the sin, and there are many, many explanations of what went wrong here. There's a lot of cracks in the psukim which can be filled with explanations as to why or how Moshe sinned in this particular instance. What went wrong? But assuming something did go wrong, the Malbim, who we're going to be focusing on, some incredible Torahs from the Malbim in today's shir, which again we normally don't do, but the Malbim's global perspective and approach here is just fantastic and is very much in the spirit of the style we've been learning. On Meimariva, he gives an explanation of what actually happened, and once you read the Malbim's pshat, I don't know how you can see anybody else's pshat. He distinguishes between the nuanced differences he's wont to do in terms of looking at the local words between a tzor versus a sela. How when Moshe was told to hit the rock in Shmot, it was a tzor, and here it's a sela. And what was the difference? And what was the way in which he was supposed to be mekadesh shem shemayim by speaking to the sela versus hitting the tzor? And why was that necessary for this generation? You should read this Malbim. The Malbim here is incredible. And the Malbim asks, yes, a lot of questions. The Malbim here asks, wow, there we go. He says, "Va'adayin nishar leva'er." We're going to jump between Malbims in Parshat Shlach by Chet Meraglim, Chukat here in our Parsha, and also we'll see why in Parshat Ve'etchanan. But we're going to merge those three together: Shlach, Chukat, and Ve'etchanan. Here in Chukat, he asks, "Va'adayin nishar leva'er." We still have to explain, "Echav shar sheba'avor davar kal kazeh." How is it possible that by doing this thing? So fine, Moshe needs to be punished, let Moshe be punished. But because of whatever went wrong here, Nigzar Onesh Kazel Shnei Sarei Tzvakot Yisrael, you have this kind of punishment on these two almost angelic characters in Klal Yisrael. That Moshe and Aaron, because of what they did, are not allowed to lead the people in, or now have to die in the Midbar. The Malbim whom himself answered previously in that same paragraph what they did wrong. So fine, they did, they made a mistake, and there was a big problem what happened there. And this generation needed to see that debor, needed to see the miraculous nature of talking to a rock and seeing water sprout forth. That needed to happen, and it didn't happen, and they made a mistake. That's what's going to cause them to have to die in the Midbar and not be able to lead the Jewish people into Eretz Yisrael? So again, as Malbim's way, he picks up on a lot of the nuances in the Pesukim. But those which are the most striking are those which appear in the beginning of Sefer Devarim. Emphasize in one instance in the beginning of Parshat Ve'etchanan, if you want to open up, you can look at it with me. Take a look at the opening of Parshat Vetchanan, Devarim Perek Gimel, Pasuk Chav Gimel. Moshe Rabbeinu, the word Vetchanan is this tefillah, this desperate tefillah of Moshe Rabbeinu asking to go into Eretz Yisrael. Vetchanan al Hashem ba'ita hi limor. I cried out, I dove into HaKadosh Baruch Hu at that time and I said, Hashem Elokim, ata hachilota laharot et ovdecha, et gadlecha v'etelcha chazaka, asher mi'el b'shamayim uva'aret asher yasek ma'asecha v'chi gvorotecha. Hashem, you've begun to show your servant your greatness and your strong hand. For what power is there in heaven and earth that can perform according to your deeds and according to your mighty acts? Ebra na, let me cross. Let me go over into Eretz Yisrael. Ve'er'eh ta'aretz ha'tova asher be'ever ha'yarden, and see the beautiful land on the Eber ha'yarden. Ha'har ha'tova zevel ha'vanon. Now listen to God's response. And we're going to look at a piece of it as it relates to our topic now, but when we get next semester finally to Sefer Devarim and then eventually to Parshat Vetchanan, we'll talk about this paragraph more. This paragraph requires a whole shiur in and of itself. But look at God's response. Vayitaber Hashem bi lema'anchem velo shama ilai. We often only hear from this pasuk, God said no. Because very often that's how we feel. We feel like God says no to our tefillot. But that's not necessarily what happens here. And if you go through the rest of the paragraph, you have to look into this paragraph. I don't think it's so clear. It's not so clear what's happening here. But either way, what do we skip over even just by saying God said no? What do the words actually mean in that response? No? What do the words mean? Vayitaber Hashem bi lema'anchem velo shama ilai. Okay. Since, despite the fact that you all have English in front of you, I'll read the English. But Hashem became angry with me because of you, and he did not listen to me. What sounds out of place there? Because of you. Vayitaber Hashem bi lema'anchem. And God became angry with me because of you? Seeming to imply what? That it was their fault that he's not allowed to go in. Well, that's interesting. That's very different. This is not like even a Ma'amar Chazal, which would have been good enough. It's a Mefurash Pasuk, and it's not the only time it appears. All throughout, laced throughout the entire beginning of Devarim, Moshe Rabbeinu emphasizes again and again and again that the reason why, he very vaguely states, but consistently, that the reason why I am not able to go into Eretz Yisrael is because of you and because of what happened at Chet HaMeraglim. So the Malbim basically says from that the reason that Moshe and Aaron, Moshe in particular, received such a harsh punishment, received the punishment that he did at Meimrivah, for hitting the rock instead of speaking to the rock, according to him, and with the whole story that he builds around that. That was the Kadosh Baruch Hu linking it to something. First of all, there was a revelation there that this generation was going to have certain limitations, if this is how Moshe Rabbeinu reacted to them, and if this is what's happened at Meimrivah, that they weren't going to be as lofty a generation as everybody might have hoped. But either way, linking to this, saying, yes, at this moment there was a mistake, and so the punishment is going to be that you're going to not be able to go in and you're going to die in the desert. But the source of that, and the root for that, and the reason why this was the punishment, this was almost the punishment that was hanging in abeyance and waiting for a chet to be attached to, that gzar din was because of Bnei Yisrael and was because of Chet HaMeraglim. So, why is that? Why is it that because of Chet HaMeraglim, Moshe was unable to go into Eretz Yisrael? Say again? There are many sources that tie it together. One example, which I can give you just from Pshat, is if you turn back, like I said, it's mentioned many times in the beginning of Sefer Devarim, to Perek Aleph Pasuk Lamed Zayin, where it literally goes through Chet HaMeraglim again in the Mishnah Torah. It repeats, it tells us again the story of Chet HaMeraglim and Parshat Devarim. It says, in the aftermath of that, Listen to the words here. We'll start from Lamed Hey. In your Eish Vanashim Ha'ele Hador Hara Hazeh. If this evil generation, they will not see at Ha'aretz Devash Nishpati Latit La'avotichem. They're not going to see this land that I promised to their forefathers. The only people who are going to see this land, the only people who are going to go in, Zulati Kalev Ben Yifune. Hu Yirenu. The Loetena Ta'aretz Asher Darach Ba'ulvanab. Yan Asher Milea Chare Hashem. Only Kalev Ben Yifune. And we also know, which is going to be repeated later on, in Yoshe Binun. Now think back even to Parshat Shlach. Does that sound familiar? Only Kalev and Yoshua. Does it sound familiar? Because it says it there in Shlach also. You know who it doesn't mention there? Moshe and Aaron. So first of all, already from there, even in the Psukim, in the fact that it was only going to be Kalev and Yoshua, it meant to the exclusion, certainly of Moshe. It didn't necessarily mean to the exclusion of Aharon. Because the Kohanim were actually allowed to go in. That's why Pinchas makes the jump over and doesn't need to be counted separately and separated out. So Aaron might have been left out, but Moshe, by not stating that Moshe was going to go through, the Malbim points out that's already being hinted to in Parshat Shlach, before even the sin of Memeriva, that Moshe's not going to go through. But then again, listen to the psalms, they go forward. And it says, and then listen to the words here, Lamed Zayin, Gam bi hit anaf Hashem biglalchem lemor. The next pasuk. And so too, in this context, did God get angry with me because of you and say, Gam ata lo tavish lo tavosham. You too will not enter there. Why chet ha-meraglim? That we have to answer. But that it is specifically chet ha-meraglim? It's not. But the pasukim here are telling us it's chet ha-meraglim. It's definitely chet ha-meraglim. Why? That's what we're going to address. So we're going to piece together between these three Malbims. The Malbim is an incredible Perush. It's just the way that he weaves together a detailed analysis of the Pshat, gracefully, again, weaves in Chazal, Midrashim, Gemarot, Midrashim and Nigle, Midrashim and Nistar, and just creates these larger pictures. It's a wonderful Perush to read. Sometimes he can get super technical because he's defending every word. Sometimes he goes really big picture, and sometimes he has something that's so big that he wants to tell you. And he's so excited. It just doesn't fit in that little box underneath the pasuk. So he creates another commentary underneath his commentary so he can give you this whole long amazing essay. When you see one of those, read it right there. They're always amazing, guaranteed. He's got something so big to tell you that he creates another title for a different perush underneath his perush to give you this long essay. And that's what he does in Shlach. In Shlach, he opens up. Suddenly, his Perush Torah V'Hamitzvah. That's his Perush. It's a really gorgeous Malbim set. I already had one, but I had to buy another one because it's such a beautiful Malbim set. Nikudos, it's great. Anyway, he has here in the Torah Or. And then look at that. The Torah V'Hamitzvah. Then underneath, he's got the Torah Or. Suddenly, the Torah Or appears. The light of the Torah appears. Because he got a whole long essay to tell you that doesn't fit under his regular pshat. Because he's like, listen, there's a huge change that's going to happen in the totality of history, and we need to understand that here. And it doesn't belong connected to a specific pasuk, but here we're going to discuss it. You ready to hear what the Malbim's understanding is as to why, because of Chet HaMeraglim, Moshe couldn't enter the land? You're holding on to your seats? They have wheels on them. Be very careful. Okay? Serious stuff. It's incredible what he says. The Malbim says as follows. When Bnei Yisrael sinned at Chet HaMeraglim, that was going to be the end of that generation. He quotes many chazals. One of the chazals that he quotes is that the Sanhedrin had a machloket, whether this generation was going to go to Gehenna forever, or whether they would have redemption at any point because of how deep their sin was. What was so deep, according to the Malbim, about Chet HaMeraglim? We discussed it at length in Parshat Shlach, so some of this should sound familiar. But what went wrong was their whole perspective was so warped. The generation that saw the Exodus, the generation that saw Yitzhak Mitzrayim, that saw Nisim Beni Flaot, what were they told? What were they promised when they were taken to the border of Eretz Yisrael? Not at your question. That God would take you in and... Not even fight the enemies. I'm going to give you the land. The land is yours. I'm guaranteeing you that no matter what happens before you, just as miraculously as you left Egypt, I will miraculously take you into the land, and you will conquer the land. And this nation, says the Malbim, did a tremendous act of kfira. They sent in Meraglim, they looked at the land, and what did they come back? What did they see? What were they afraid of? These giants, these warriors, how are we going to overcome them? Despite all of the miracles that they saw, they were unable to have the emunah HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he can split seas, he can make fire and hail fall from the sky. He can make locust swarms. He can turn blood to water and water to blood. And now suddenly, oh, no, these people are looking a little frightening. I don't know if God can take it. I'm not going in. That generation was kofrim in their belief in the capacity of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that God can do anything, created a machlok in the Sanhedrin where they would go to Gehenna forever. There was no hope for them. So let's assume that Moshe Rabbeinu had gone forward. That there wasn't Vayitanef Hashem bi lema'anchem. Vayitaber Hashem bi lema'anchem. That God didn't get angry at Moshe because of that. So there are many chazals that indicate this. Rashi quotes some of them along these same parshiot, particularly in Devarim. That had Moshe gone on, and had Moshe entered into Eretz Yisrael, Moshe's whole essence, and we talked about this previously, Moshe's whole essence, there were two pieces to what he was. On the one hand, his reality, we talked about this in contrast to Yoshua. Yoshua versus Moshe. What was Moshe? What was Yoshua? Moshe was the more miraculous side of reality. And Yoshua is the much more grounded side of reality. Moshe's whole reality is the reality of plagues and splitting seas and the desert with the Anan and the Esh and the Be'er and the Man that's in his schut, the food of Malachim that's falling from the sky, that's in the schut of Moshe Rabbeinu. His whole reality is Nisi, is miraculous. Additionally, and this we touched upon in Shir Kali today, that certain individuals brought certain midot into reality. What midah did Moshe Rabbeinu fix into reality in the spectrum of the seven midot? Netzach. What does Netzach mean? Two things. What? Eternal and?
Victorious.
And victorious. Excellent. You two are eternally victorious together at that table. Right? Eternal and victorious. That had Moshe Rabbeinu got in, Moshe Rabbeinu is always going to win. He's always going to be Menatzeach. And we're told that in his miraculous way, every step that he would have taken in Eretz Yisrael, their enemies would have miraculously fallen before him. There wouldn't have been a war. This was Moshe Rabbeinu. This is the generation that left Mitzrayim and was going to enter Eretz Yisrael. He would have put his foot down and their enemies would have fallen. And not only would their enemies would have fallen, but they would have fallen forever. There's no coming back. It's an eternal victory. He's an individual who's linked to the infinite, linked to the eternal. And then goes Moshe Rabbeinu and marches without any opposition straight to Yerushalayim and right to Har HaBayit. And what does he do when he gets to Har HaBayit? He builds the Beit HaMikdash. And if Moshe Rabbeinu builds the Beit HaMikdash, what do we know about the Beit HaMikdash? It's also going to be eternal. Cannot be destroyed. Nothing that Moshe Rabbeinu builds can be destroyed. We talked about that in Parshat Naso, that's why the Mishkan remains eternal. That's why the Mishkan still exists, sitting there as the foundation of Beit HaMikdash. Because Moshe built it. And what Moshe builds is eternal. And if Moshe built that Beit HaMikdash, it would have been eternal. Listen to the godless of the Malbim. The Malbim says, had that been the case, we would have achieved the Tikkun HaGamor. History would have come to a close as God would have revealed himself to the Jewish people, and the Jewish people would have been raised up, and God's glory would have been revealed to the Jewish people in the land of Israel. The end. However, there were two problems with that. Problem number one is had Moshe Rabbeinu done that, then the Jews that were in Eretz Yisrael would have gone on to eternity. Who would have been left behind? We'll get there soon. Who would have left behind? His generation. Sitting out there dead in the Midbar with a Din Gehinom on them for eternity as well. That the people who he led out of Egypt would never have been able to come back from where they fell to. That would have been the end of that generation. They were gone. And number two, that revelation at what would have been the end of days would have been severely limited. That the only people that would have experienced the revelation of the oneness of God in this world would have been Bnei Israel, in Eretz Israel. And that's one way that it could have gone. But there was another path. And that path is Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't go into Eretz Israel. Now all of history changes. Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't go in. Moshe Rabbeinu is not allowed to go in. So what happens next? Moshe Rabbeinu can't go in. What happens when Moshe Rabbeinu can't go in? What's the first thing that needs to happen? We no longer have Moshe. We need Yoshua. We need another leader. So we have Yoshua. What's Yoshua's essence that we've been talking about in that shir and in this shir? What's he all about? He's the warrior. He's going to fight that physical battle. And so first of all, history changes. No longer is there a miraculous conquest of Eretz Yisrael. There is now absolutely going to be a tactical, military conquest of Eretz Yisrael. Definitionally less successful. Definitionally less comprehensive. They're going to fight a war. And they're going to defeat whoever they can defeat. And there's going to be a down-to-earth, grounded battle to own Eretz Yisrael, to win over Eretz Yisrael. That's going to be Yehoshua's fight. And that's why every time it says that Moshe Rabbeinu can't go in, it says, and Yehoshua, strengthen him because he's going to go in instead of you. It's going to go totally differently. And he needs chizuk. He needs to be strengthened because it's not going to be miraculous. Now you're going to fight that fight. And you're going to march to Beit HaMikdash, which doesn't even happen in the times of Yehoshua. But eventually, you're going to march to Beit HaMikdash. And what are you going to do, Margalit? Build a Beit HaMikdash. But now, that Beit HaMikdash is no longer a Beit HaMikdash with a core of Netzach. It doesn't need to be eternal. Now it can be destroyed. And that's good. Because what was also revealed, according to the Malbim and the Maimon Revised, is that they were going to be on a loftier spiritual plane, they were going to handle certain things, but they weren't going to be the right generation necessarily for the Tikkun HaGamor. And now, instead of HaKadosh Baruch Hu having to wipe out his people, well-known Midrash, he'd now be able to destroy the Beit HaMikdash instead. He could take his anger out on the eights and the Evan, he could take his anger out on the stones, on the tree, on the wood of the Beit HaMikdash, and not have to destroy his people. So now that Yeshua went in, there was a physical military conquest, there was a Beit HaMikdash that was built, didn't have to be the eternal Beit HaMikdash, it can get destroyed, and it was destroyed. And what happens when it gets destroyed? What happens to us? Exile, galut. But not just galut. We don't just get moved from one place to another. What happens to us? To this very day, we're scattered amongst all of the nations. And we go through a long period and process of exile. In a way, as the Malbim frames it, quoting Psukim as his basis, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is planting us like seeds within the nations. So that way, at the end of days, when the end of days come, we sprout forth and we come forward. And because we're all over the four corners of the earth, the revelation of the oneness of God is not to a unified people in Eretz Yisrael, but now where is that revelation happening? To the entire world, and suddenly the whole world is now, because of the exile, the whole world is now receiving an understanding of the oneness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and part of that tikkun, part of that new beautiful world that comes about, because it's happening in all four corners of the globe. Says the Malbim, emotion not going in. His generation was therefore able to go into Eretz Yisrael. He was able to retroactively redeem that generation, his generation. The generation that he led out, the generation he grew up in, the generation he led out of Mitzrayim. Say again? He'd be able to redeem them. They wouldn't be in Gehenna forever. He'd be able to bring them back, and they would come back too at the end of days. How so? Because out of the chesed of Hashem, he would look at the scenario as follows. First of all, what did we say was the essence of the kfira of that generation? They didn't believe what?
Hashem's capabilities.
They didn't believe in the miraculous conquest of Eretz Yisrael. Well, you know what? Now that Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't go in, what happens? There is no miraculous conquest of Israel. It is a military conquest. And it is something to be frightened about. And it is something to carefully consider and think out. And that's why you need Yoshua to lead them. Because you need a military leader who's going to lead you. Because you do have to go through the difficulties of war. And so even though their intentions at the time were tremendously problematic and still keep them from being able to go in at that time, they still die out in the desert. But retroactively, God will look at what happened, and based on what actually happened, the kfira there was much less problematic. They were afraid of the military conquest, but they had every right to be afraid because there was going to be a military conquest. You'll tell me they didn't know that, says the Malbim, I know that too. But a Kadosh Baruch was willing to retroactively look at them and say, okay, you were right. You were right to be afraid because there was a military conquest. But it goes even deeper than that. It goes even deeper than that. That God is not just the way that the Malbim phrases it. Very beautiful lashon that he uses. If I hadn't underlined the entire Malbim, I'd be able to find it much more quickly. It's an incredible Malbim. He says, "Ach zeh tzmo haya mechasdei Hashem." This is also of the chesed of Hashem. This line appears in Parshat Shlach. "Shelo hishkif al hasiba, rak al hamisovav." That God didn't look at the cause, he only looked at the result. And recognizing that that is the chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he decided to work that way. And God looks at the scenario and says, had you not sinned, and Moshe Rabbeinu led you in because you didn't sin, then there would have been a local, small revelation only for the Jewish people. But because you sinned, because of the new reality and history that you forged, because of you, let's leave the whole beginning of the sentence behind and make a whole new sentence. Because of you, Dor HaMidbar, because of you, now the whole world is going to experience a revelation of God's oneness. I don't care how we got there. I'm going to give that to you as a schut anyway. Because of you, the whole world is going to experience a oneness of the revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Unbelievable. And since we were able to remove that level of kfira, because now there was Lemaisa, a military conquest, since we no longer have an eternal Beit HaMikdash, because Moshe didn't build it, and since we have exile, which now allows us to be planted amongst the nations to bring everyone to a recognition of the oneness of God in the end of days, then because of that, Chazal say that Moshe Rabbeinu, this is how he explains this Chazal, that Moshe Rabbeinu was buried in Chutz La'aretz so that in the world to come, he would be able to rise up with that generation and then lead them in. That's why he stayed outside. So in Tchiyat HaMetim, he would rise with them and lead that generation finally into Eretz Yisrael. Whole different way to understand history. How it went forward. The meaning of what Moshe Rabbeinu is. What the essence of Netzach is. What he could have accomplished. Why things changed. Why they had to change. One last piece. It also explains a seemingly cryptic, but now very poignant Chazal, which he quotes at the end of this piece on Parshat Shlach. Remember we just read from the beginning of Parshat Vetchanan. What did Moshe Rabbeinu ask? What was his actual tefillah? What did he want? How do you phrase it? Ebrana, let me cross over. Exactly what you said. Let me cross over. He quotes a Midrash Chazal, the very end of the piece on Parshat Shlach. V'zeh kavanat Chazal b'Midrash, which says, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe. God says to Moshe, Shnei bakashot bakashta. You asked of me two things, Moshe Rabbeinu. Slachna, forgive these people for chetam raglim. Slachna, and ebrana, let me cross over. Say Chazal, livatel shnehem iefshar. I can't overturn both of those. It's a quote from Chazal. What does it mean? Now we know what it means. That's the beauty of the Malbim. Levatel shnehem iefshar. I can't overturn both of them because they inherently are soter one another. Ebrana yivutal. Sorry, imekayim ebrana. If I uphold ebrana, if I let you cross over, then by default yivutal slachna. Then I can't forgive them. V'im ekayim slachna. And if I forgive them, yivutal ebrana. I desperately want to give you what you want, but you have asked me, Moshe Rabbeinu. You've asked me for two things that are inherently contradictory to one another, and I'm happy to give you whatever you want. Whatever you want is fine. You're Moshe Rabbeinu. Whatever you want is fine. You can choose. Slachna, forgive them. But the only way to forgive them is if you stay outside and let history unfold differently and let them rise up again retroactively as having been in a place where they can receive an inheritance of Eretz Yisrael. Or, Ebrana, you can cross over, but you're dooming them to remain out there forever. Your choice. But I literally, Kadosh Baruch Hu can do anything. But within the nature of Hashkachat Hashem, the way this world is designed, I can do one or the other. Which already reframes the conversation in Beit Hanan. But there's more there, and we'll tackle it next semester. But he's saying that's what the meaning of this Chazal is. It was going to be one or the other. Which I also think fits in beautifully with everything that we said last year. What did we say on Monday? Why is this all appearing in Parashat Chukat? What's Chukat about? What is the Paraduma about? Same question that I asked Forrest, look for the same answer. Being Matar from Tumat Meit. And showing that from death can come life. And that by purifying, you become impure. Look at how beautifully that's reflected. And the Malbim doesn't say this, but I think it's a Dover Pasha that's what's happening here. How beautifully that fits with what we just discussed about what this whole parsha is about. That Moshe Rabbeinu had a choice. One way or another, by purifying, you're going to become impure. If you purify these people, if you let them become purified in the future, you yourself become impure and you're going to have to stay outside. If you want them, there's a reality of death here. But from death, you have the choice to create that through their death and through your own, you can bring them life. This concept of things being much more complex than they seem at first. That the Hashkachat Hashem is so mysterious, it's almost like a chok. Zot Chukat HaTorah. That it's inherent to what Parsha Chukat is about. That a Kadosh Baruch Hu is manipulating death from life and life from death. Purity from impurity and impurity from purity. And creating this potential. And perhaps even more strongly, assuming that this really was a choice that was placed before Moshe Rabbeinu. It's not clear from the way that the Malbim quotes that Gemara. I don't know if that means that Moshe had the choice or not. But assuming for the sake of argument that Moshe did have that choice. Assuming, and I could be wrong. That Moshe Rabbeinu said, I would rather stay outside. And it's so Moshe Rabbeinu. I'd rather die with them to give them life than go forward and leave them behind in a place of death. That's my choice. Now, it's not clear to me that that's the case. But I think the Gemara certainly hints in that direction. We need more investigation. So I think it fits into the themes of Parshat Chukat that we've discussed. I think it's really important to recognize, again, as we keep talking about, both in Parshat Shlach and Chukat, just how deeply the course of Jewish history changed in these parshiot. The potential that there was for this generation, and how much was lost at Chet HaMeraglim, and how much is lost here, even just in Moshe Rabbeinu not going in, because of Mei Merivah, that gets attached to it. To recognize the nuance of when you're going through Chumash and you have a seemingly odd phrase like, God got angry at me because of you, that there's worlds to open up there. to get a chance to learn the Malvim together, which is always amazing. And I highly... 5 stars. I don't know if I can do that. The Malvim doesn't need my 5 stars. He was amazing long before I came along. But the Malvim is again, it's an incredible pirush that I would highly recommend spending some time on if you have time. But it's he's clear. He's just beautifully weaves together pshat and drash and sod all together in his pirush. But to just have a more holistic understanding, not just of the nuance of what did Moshe do or not do. And that's a shir for another time. And there's a lot of Torah that's been written and spoken about it. And I'm sure you can find it online. But beyond just what went wrong, to start thinking not just about what happens, but about the consequences of those actions and how deeply they impacted Jewish history and how deeply HaKadosh Baruch Hu was dedicated to creating a potential for the entirety of the Jewish people to reach that tikkun. Bezrat Hashem, we should all see that tikkun hagamor soon, Mihira Bi'Aminu, and see HaKadosh Baruch Hu with our own eyes lead the generation of the Midbar back into a fixed, beautiful, and rebuilt Eretz Yisrael.